KALW.
I love KALW. I think you guys have awesome programming and great news reporting.
This Sunday marks 83 years of KALW broadcasting in the Bay Area.
Think about who's actually been changing the game. It's always happened right here.
Today, a quick look back at what we've been up to. Then we hear from an Oakland sports superfan about the departure of the A's.
I've always said that we're not going to let them dictate the end of professional baseball in Oakland, and look at us now.
And it's Trans History Month, but people from the community are still unsure what it means.
I feel like my friends and my community members haven't really seen the effects of that.
Sorting out the authentic from the performative. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. If you didn't know, this Sunday, KALW turns 83 years old, and we don't sound a day over 50. Now, to be clear, Sunday isn't just our birthday, it's our day. And that's according to San Francisco Mayor London Breed.
And I'm going to proclaim September 1st, the birthday of KALW, as KALW Day in the city and county of San Francisco.
Breed made that proclamation in 2021, and we've celebrated a few KALW days since then. In 2022, we heard from our friends and colleagues who helped make our station what it is today.
I love KALW.
Yeah, just I'm so lucky. I'm so, so lucky that I got to be part of such an amazing place and community.
Shouts out to KALW.
Then last year, our newly hired executive director, James Cass, spoke about the future and asked,
what are the communities that KALW is in relationship with or wants to be in relationship with? And what's our responsibility and accountability to those communities? And what does that really look like? And how does that show up in the work of KALW and the programming that happens on the radio and other places?
For a long time, we've worked to create and curate programming that's informative, inclusive, and joyful. But it's only recently that we've begun to invite you to a new live event space. If you're a regular listener, you may have heard about KALW at 220 Montgomery in downtown San Francisco. We got a space a year ago through the city's Vacant to Vibrant program, and we've been busy. We've hosted live bands, pub quizzes, film screenings, and Bay Area locals have shared their stories and art with us, like E. Okobi, who read her poem at our open mic night about her brother, Chinadu, who was killed by San Mateo police in 2018. Here's an excerpt from Brown-Skinned Baby.
Brown skin. Baby. So who's going to be the savior now? Can we win with angry chanting, waving signs, raised fists? Are righteous crowds enough when we allow our minds to be occupied by entertainers who dehumanize black and brown women who look like mothers, sisters, daughters, human? Brown skin, baby. Who's going to be the savior now that young brothers can't speak about their fear of each other? The police, just another force to be contended with in a world that hates for black and brown men to love and support each other, be vulnerable, emotional beings together. Brown skin, baby.
Okay. Aside from art and culture, we've also turned our KALW downtown space into a source of information. We've held supervisor debates and town hall conversations, like the one on San Francisco's Prop F that requires adults to be screened for drug use before getting benefits.
A lot of the treatment programs that are offered are not sufficient whatsoever to help someone with a substance use disorder such as an addiction to fentanyl. It's a huge leap to go from being addicted to fentanyl to being in recovery, and most people don't even believe it's possible because the care courts, all that stuff, like 2 weeks or something like that, like is not even nearly sufficient.
That was Shannon Knox, executive director of the San Francisco Drug Users Union, in conversation with journalist Nuala Bisheri, a conversation moderated by our friends at the San Francisco Public Press. It's been incredible to take the work we're doing to a space where people can gather. And we've got plenty more events planned, from listening parties to local election forums, karaoke nights, and our next open mic that's happening tomorrow. Find more information about all of that at kalw.org/220Montgomery. Now, a blessing from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who graced us with their presence back in 2021 in honor of KALW Day. Take it away, sisters.
Hail, KALW, full of grace. The nuns are with thee. Blessed art thou on thy 80th anniversary, and blessed is the fruit of thy airwaves. Holy KALW, Mother of FM west of the Mississippi, we celebrate you and your listeners now and at the hour of their favorite programming. We bless the knobs and the tubes, the towers and transmitters. We bless electromagnetic fields, and we bless the voices. We bless the work of hosts, producers, reporters, and engineers. We bless the microphones, and we triple bless those who donate for those microphones. We bless the gaffes, the radio silences, and the bloopers. We cast out the venom of right-wing radio. We cast out hate and fear, scapegoating and demonizing. We proclaim KALW a sacred antidote and a holy balm. And we bless the antidote and we bless the balm. We bless your sound waves of introspection, your words that challenge, inspire, and demand justice. We bless your commitment to inclusivity. We bless convictions that move us and remind us that we are indeed all one. We bless the music. Oh, we bless the music. The songs that soothe us in our sorrow and beats that call our feet to dance. We bless you with gratitude, KALW, for sending good vibrations all over and through us for lo these 80 years. Amen, a woman, and all the others.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Oakland A's fans made national headlines last summer when they organized a reverse boycott. They packed the Coliseum and called on the team's owner to sell. With a month to go before the A's play their last game in Oakland, we talked to one of the organizers of the protest about his bittersweet feelings towards his soon-to-be-departing hometown team. But first, an update on their recent games. It's the next episode of Foul Ball with host Sunni Khalid.
The A's are back on the road this week, playing a pair of three-game series in Cincinnati and Texas. 2 weeks ago, Oakland had the best record in the American League since July 1st, but that was before losing 4 of 6 games at the Coliseum to Tampa Bay and Milwaukee. With little more than a month before the A's play their last game in Oakland before moving next season to Sacramento, the team has been drawing larger crowds. Sunday, about 16,000, nearly double the season's average attendance, showed up to see Joey Estes take the mound against the Brewers.
It's going to be young right-hander Joey Estes on the mound, 18th start of the season. But Joey Estes has been a guy, when we talk about progress in this rotation, really across the board for this team, Joey Estes is a name that I think comes to mind very, very early.
But just like the two previous games against the Brewers, the A's fell behind early.
He makes the turn and puts on the brakes. If there was a bobble by Butler, Sal would have been standing at second. Instead, a one-out hit, first of the day for the Brewers.
And he's aboard in front of Gary Sanchez.
Good lead for Frelick at first, staying put, and this one driven to left. Back Cameron, still back and out of here. Gary Sanchez can just trot around the bases. Another homer for Gary.
How about more runs for the Brewers in the second inning? Clearly their favorite inning here against the A's.
But the A's didn't fold. 2 innings later, they rallied for 4 runs in the bottom of the fourth to take the lead.
Bases remain loaded. A's are within a run. Seth Brown is the hitter. And Seth grounds it hard and through the hole for a base hit. 1 run scores. Blade is being held up. The game is tied. At 2-2.
Phenomenal job of being ready to hit by Seth Brown.
5 consecutive batters have reached base safely for the Athletics. Swung on a fly ball to right field, did pretty well. Going back forward to Freeland near the track, and now on the track, reaches up and makes the catch for the out. Tagging is Blade, he'll score, going to third base Langoliers. The A's have the lead, it's 3-2.
Esty has settled down, not giving up another run as he pitched into the sixth. The Brewers scored in the seventh to come within a run. But then, once again, it was Miller time, as A's manager Mark Kotze called upon his rookie closer Mason Miller in the eighth.
Mason Miller back to the mound, starting the top of the ninth inning. Oakland ahead 4-3. Jake Bowers, Willie Adames, Sal Frelick, 4, 5, and 6 in the Milwaukee lineup. Stand in the way of the 21st save for Miller, and the A's Sunday afternoon win, salvaging one of the series.
And Mason Miller brews up a win for the A's. His 21st save. They win 4-3 and send Milwaukee home with a final loss on their road.
The A's began this week with the fourth best record in the big league since July 1st. They were 26-19, which is only good enough for last place in the American League West Division. In the last episode, I spoke with Nancy Finley, the cousin of Charlie Finley, the man who moved the A's from Kansas City to Oakland in 1968. In this week's episode, I speak with Jorge Leon, one of the organizers of the Oakland 68s, a local fan-based group that has been leading a series of spirited protests in the Coliseum parking lot, initially calling for A's owner John Fisher to sell the team. With about a month before the A's play their final game in Oakland, I asked Leon about his bittersweet feelings toward his soon-to-be departing hometown team.
When did your organization start and why?
We've been known as Right Field, Left Field, Bleacher Diehards at the Oakland Coliseum since the early 2000s. And then in 2017, we're also soccer fans, so we decided to become more organized like a supporters group does in the soccer world. So we decided on a name and we said Oakland 68s. And that was due to a lot of events in 1968, not just the A's landing in Oakland, a lot of social movements and the Olympics in Mexico in 1968. So we chose that name. And then in 2020, we became a nonprofit organization. And that's how it all came about. And now we're super avid fans and support everything Oakland and the sports world and in the community as well.
Well, most people usually have seen your organizing in the parking lot at the Coliseum before A's games. I think you started last year when the talk of a move by the A's to Las Vegas really started picking up steam. And you were selling t-shirts that said one word, sell?
Yeah, so we weren't selling them. We were giving them away. We raised over 48K from all the fans. So this was all a kind of a fan movement at the reverse boycott last year,
which was one of the largest attendance.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest games last year. We're kind of proud of it. And then the shirt got put in Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame Museum. So kind of proud about that. But the sell, we've been asking the ownership for the A's to sell the team since 2010. So it's been a long time coming. And now, you know, we put all of it in, and we changed the narrative and we put it in the front news, and here we are.
What was opening day like for you this year? And do you remember hearing about the announcement of the A's move to Sacramento and eventually Las Vegas?
Yeah, you know, opening day is always a holiday for us and the family. We usually take it off and it's usually a joyous occasion. This time was a bittersweet. We called for a boycott. We had over 15,000 fans in the parking lot that didn't go inside the game. And it was one of the lowest opening day in attendance for the A's in their history at the Coliseum. So it was bittersweet. You know, I remember the Vegas announcement, you know, last year. Vividly, I had just laid down my daughter to sleep. And I remember just looking up at my phone and seeing it. It was kind of a gut punch, but at the same time, kind of anger. And all honestly, the Sacramento news wasn't at all kind of a slap in the face again. And we kept going with the movement.
What's morale like been within your group, and how large is your group?
Well, our morale has been kind of, you know, still we support the Oakland Roots professional soccer team, the Oakland Soul. We are now supporting the Oakland Ballers. So we've kind of focused our attention more into community-minded organizations and sports teams like that. So the morale has been kind of, yeah, while we're losing the A's, but yet we're still drumming out at the Ballers games. We're still tailgating there. We're still kind of advising the team on issues that surround the community. And that's been our morale. So we still keep going, you know.
Well, there's only a month left before the A's play their last game at the Coliseum. What have you planned to commemorate that?
You would have to follow us on Twitter or on Instagram and check out our updates, but nothing planned as of now. We do have a kind of a protest coming up in September 1st at the San Francisco MoMA Museum of Arts. That's where the Fisher family has their arts there, and they're doing a sports culture art exhibit. And we're going to show up with our banners and signs that we hung up because we feel that's also art and that represents the culture.
Jorge, you've been at this for a while. The A's decided to move anyway. Has it been worth it?
Yeah. I mean, no doubt about it. 100%. I'm one of those people that believe that I don't like complaining. I like doing things. And I think that I've done what I've could to try and keep the A's here. I've always said that we're not going to let them dictate the end of professional baseball in Oakland. And look at us now. They didn't dictate the end of professional baseball in Oakland. There's another team now. And I think that kind of represents what we've been fighting for. You know, that was kind of born because of us. So it's been worth it, honestly. And I would do it all over again. I would fight for what I believe in. I mean, that's why I'm an Oakland native, right? We Black Panther movement was started there. The Brown Berets were from there. I mean, everything starts in Oakland.
What are going to be your most poignant memories of your fandom toward the A's? And are you going to follow them once they depart for Sacramento and eventually Las Vegas?
No, not at all. This is the last game in Oakland. That's going to be it. We're Ballers fans now. You know, my biggest memories at the Coliseum have always been, you know, part of, you know, my family and friends. Those memories will always be there, and we're going to continue with the roots there next year. So if I had to put it in rankings, I would rank, you know, the reverse boycott number one, because that was us. We put that there. We put an exclamation mark. We've proved that we're here. If ownership decides to buy it or if ownership decides to sell it and another ownership comes through and keeps it here, we've proved that, right? And so I think that's kind of our hurrah. Like that's our victory. I don't let the other things that happen get to us.
That was Jorge Leon of the Oakland 68 speaking with KALW News editor Sunni Khalid. Find the rest of the Foul Ball series at klw.org/foulball. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. It's Transgender History Month. This year, California adopted it statewide. But before the state, San Francisco made the designation back in 2021. In August of that year, Mayor London Breed announced the city was investing millions in trans initiatives.
We have been able to launch extraordinary programs that no one ever thought of. It's because of this community and their advocacy.
That funding expired in 2023, and there have been some questions around what was done with it and when and how it will be renewed. KALW's Christopher Alam investigated what the last 3 years have looked like and how the city is supporting trans people today.
The Office of Transgender Initiatives led the efforts to designate this holiday. Honey Mahogany, who heads this office, said that Trans History Month follows in the steps of other social causes.
We look at many civil rights movements, the African American struggle for freedom and liberation, and a lot has been gained through merely educating people, both ourselves and the public, as to who we are as a people.
But 3 years later, it is not clear that trans people, by and large, are feeling the effects. In San Francisco's Castro District, the fact that this is Trans History Month is news to almost everybody.
We could do a lot more, even though we are like the most progressive city.
Like, we also want money towards organizations and things to help trans people, one, transition and feel safe.
I feel like my friends and my community members haven't really seen the effects of that.
That was Chris Watts, Taylor James Monet, and Una Chang. None of them had heard of Trans History Month, and they wondered if it was performative. They didn't really understand what was being done for the trans community, despite the investments that Mayor Breed made in 2021. The mayor devoted millions to acquire the site that would become the LGBTQ Museum. She put $2 million towards a guaranteed income project and another $2 million into Black trans equity programming through the Dreamkeepers Initiative. That's a part of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission. They funded organizations like the Lyric LGBTQ Youth Center. That's the second oldest and largest organization serving queer youth in the country. They host a wide range of programs, including paid career development, housing support, and healthcare access. In the 35 years they've been active, they've worked with thousands of youth. Since the grant expired in 2023, reapplying for funding has not been easy.
So it just, we're in a little bit of a crisis here, and no one knows what we're going to be in a few months.
That's the executive director of Lyric Center, Gael Lala Chavez. They say Lyric had to do layoffs and cut services like the youth leadership program because of the city's budget crisis.
They're in a huge deficit, and they're anticipating this next year being the same. And even the state is experiencing some budget issues. It just trickles down to service providers like Lyric.
This comes at a critical time for trans youth in America.
The left-wing gender insanity being pushed on our children is an act of child abuse. Very simple. On day one, I will revoke Joe Biden.
With transphobic legislation in other states compelling many young people to escape to places like San Francisco, where, despite the challenges, there are significantly more resources for trans people. Lala Chavez says since joining Lyric in 2021, the amount of young people from outside the city seeking their services is skyrocketing, now making up around 40% of their clients.
We will not close our doors. We will continue to do what we do. Our staff is very resilient, and we're doing as best that we can with the resources that we have.
Though the funding may have dried up this year, Lala Chavez doesn't feel that Trans History Month is all performative.
Transgender History Month is an opportunity for them to feel empowered, to feel connected to community, to feel like they're not alone.
Lala Chavez is part of the Transgender Advocacy Group with the city's Office of Transgender Initiatives. There, they are working on educating people about Trans History Month and meeting with city officials to maintain funding for trans services. That way, they can stay intact even in times of significant budget crisis. Lala Chavez also works closely with Honey Mahogany, the director of the Office of Transgender Initiatives. Mahogany says that celebrating the culture and identity of trans people is a tool for making material gains.
Oftentimes there's this false dichotomy of, oh, well, you can't celebrate culture or history because people are suffering. And I think that is false. We have to do both. In order to give us the sort of spiritual food that we need to fight another day, we have to find time to celebrate and acknowledge history and culture and use that as a way for us to advocate and push for more access, more services, more equity, more inclusion.
Until budget woes can give way to organizations desperately in need of resources, Transgender History Month may be stuck in a phase of being unintentionally performative. Right now, there's a lot of will, but not a lot of ways to fund it. In San Francisco, I'm Christopher Alam for CrossCurrents.
Christopher reported that story as part of our Newsroom Summer Fellowship. Find more stories on the Bay Area's transgender community and links to resources at kalw.org/crosscurrents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Arun Nair, Afton Okwu, Julia Haney, Cherie Bishop, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shireen Adil, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.